Here. I can't adjust anything, so I'm
so not, now, Christy, you're too low.
Okay, how about now?
That's better.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So
fix it and post. That's the key.
Fix
post,
it in post. Yes. You know what? Fuck it. Just post. Post everything. Everything's in post. Okay.
Welcome to the Shit We Don't Tell Mom podcast. This is Christy.
And this is Angie.
And we're here to chat about the uncomfortable shit we secretly want to talk about as Asian millennials.
I'm excited for this. Sound good? I appreciate this. Woohoo! You guys are the best.
Aw.
You two are the best.
Okay. Are we good to go?
Yep.
Alrighty then. Welcome back to another episode of Shit We Don't Tell Mom, where we get comfortable with the uncomfortable. And today we're going to be talking with Steve Ngo, who is our dear friend. And he, okay, this is going to take a while. And if you could hear clicking sounds, because I have this whole spiel for Steve, because he's like this whole other human that I sometimes don't know if he's really a human. Because, okay, so here we go. Steve, he is a self-proclaimed social entrepreneur. So what does that mean? That means he is a founder slash co-founder to a crap ton of nonprofit organizations, some of which include Beyond the A, which helps to destigmatize anxiety in the legal profession and empower lawyers in their careers. There's the Living Room series, which has been mentioned on the podcast a couple of times already, probably more than a couple. Uh-huh. But the Living Room series, what is it? It is basically, we hang out and we talk about a whole bunch of stuff that we don't normally talk about. We have meaningful conversation with diverse groups of people. Basically, Steve brings in all these people from around the community, people, strangers, basically. And then we come together and we talk about deep stuff. And most recently, Steve has led a campaign on anti-Asian hate crime reporting because he found out that there is a huge systemic barrier to reporting anti-Asian hate crimes in the Vancouver community. And now he's all over the place. He's all over the news. He is also a lawyer. He's a musician. He is a husband. And he is our good friend. Welcome, Steve, to the show.
You did awesome there. I love it. I'm glad to be here. Thank you so much. What an intro. You should do my intros for every single talk.
Oh, I'd love to. I have this like secret fantasy that I want to do voiceovers one day. You know, I just want to do voice stuff all the time.
I think you could do that.
Steve's also a TEDx speaker, by the way, because, you know, he just doesn't do enough. And so in his spare time, he likes to give speeches. Steve, that was a lot of stuff. I'm truly honored to be friends with you because I get to see all the cool things that you do, and it really motivates me as a human being to do more things. But I always wonder, do you ever get tired?
Do I ever get tired? Yeah, yesterday I fell asleep on my seat just here like 11:30. I just like this. I called it meditating, but really I think I was sleeping.
Sometimes when I meditate, I end up falling asleep. Why I ask this is because I feel like, okay, on social media, that's where I mostly see your work. And on social media, you're always doing something and then you take it to a whole other level. You were a victim of some hate crimes recently. I think if that happened to me, I would have ranted about it on social media. And then I would, you know, get some comments and feedback from friends and say like, oh yeah, that really sucks and blah, blah, right? But you took it to a whole fucking other level. You like got the media involved. It's now on the Globe and Mail. Like it has blown up in a way that it should be blown up. And he's on the cover of the Vancouver Sun. That's Steve compared to regular folks like me. But I always wonder, behind the scenes, what is that like?
Yeah, let's dive into it. I'm happy to peel the layer back and go deep. So happy to jump in wherever you want to start.
Why don't you tell us a bit about how Beyond the A got started? Because I know offline you had mentioned some anxiety in the past. There's been some low points. And this is something that I don't see on social media from Steve's page, because I just see all these campaigns that you run. I feel like I would be very burnt out if I were involved in so many things. But I also feel like maybe Steve does get really tired, and Steve might feel some levels of anxiety at times as well. And seeing that you had started Beyond the A makes me wonder, there must have been something that had happened for you to feel like this is important to talk about, especially in the legal profession.
Really, there's two things I want to highlight. Really, the first thing is, whether getting tired or not, it gave me this realization, if you're doing things that give you energy, it's awesome. Like, so speaking to the two of you, give me energy. This is like the highlight of my night, my highlight of my day, actually. So it's really about that. But the second one on Beyond the A, so for myself, I when I was an undergrad, I thought about being a doctor, like a typical Asian kid, and that wasn't for me. So I decided to be a lawyer. Why not? So I went to law school. I worked at probably one of the most so-called prestigious law firms in Canada, and I was feeling miserable. And I thought, maybe I need to chase something bigger. So I landed a job at one of the most prestigious law firms in the world, thinking that that would be my solution to happiness. And when you're chasing these visuals, these dreams of what you think is happiness, that's when it really crushed me inside. So about maybe a couple months into my time working in Asia, I had this expat lifestyle. And I was living this big life. I had VIP access to parties, waterfront apartment, like a private driver. But really, I was dying inside. And there was this one moment I remember, I was actually standing on the ledge of my balcony, seriously thinking about whether I wanted to keep living or not. And that's when I realized that, man, things have really changed, and no one really talks about anxiety in the profession. No one talks about depression in the legal profession. It's all about this glamour, this nice suits lifestyle, your jet setting, you have like free flow alcohol and food. But really, that's just a shell, when inside, if you don't work on the insides and talk about things like that, there's nothing. And so I was crumbling inside, and I was so fortunate to have really good friends that I could turn to, because I talked to my best friends, like, this is what's happening right now. And it gave me a big wake up call. And it just so happened that week I had a buddy fly in from Vancouver. And I shared with him what I'm going through. And he said, Stephen, I'm going through the same thing as well. Mm. And it just opened up my mind. There must be other lawyers who are keeping this inside. And so that's what Beyond the A is about. It stands for Beyond A's, Beyond Achievement, Beyond Anxiety. Because anxiety is so stigmatized in the legal profession. And the whole purpose and mission is to destigmatize anxiety and to empower lawyers to thrive in their lives and career.
Take us back to that night when you were on the balcony and you felt like you had the whole world, because you have all this glitz, you have all the glamour, that suit stuff that we're familiar with, but you also felt so empty. Those are two opposing feelings. Can you share a little bit more about what are some of your thoughts and emotions in that moment when you were on the balcony?
Yeah, so I think it was a slow burn, right? It was a slow buildup to that moment. It wasn't like suddenly like, boom, this is what's happening. But it was a slow buildup. And so just to backtrack a little bit, I was living in Vietnam, and you know, I started chasing these external validations to make myself feel better. And I felt like I was chasing really the wrong goals. That week and that night when it happened, I was on a couple of massive deals. And because you're working on so many things at the same time, I was barely sleeping. I was like collapsing on my table, like going from 2 to 6 in the morning, like sleeping 4 hours. And I had made a mistake that day at work. Absolutely my fault, because there's so many things going on. I wasn't in the right mind space. And I suddenly questioned, like, am I good enough to be a lawyer? Do I deserve to be here? And it really crushed my soul. And then everything starts unraveling at that point. You know, I'm someone who does carry a very positive demeanor. I have this happy-go-lucky attitude. And it gave me this really shock in my system that this affects anybody. Anybody, absolutely anybody. You could have this rock star apparently from the surface, but it just shows that there is, you know, there's a facade. And that's kind of what I want to open up about, is that there is a facade in the way things come across. And it's okay to talk about it.
I have goosebumps. It felt like your emotions were kind of coming up again because I really felt the emotions through the screen. You were like, you know, everything is just a facade. Like everyone has stuff going on behind them. Yeah, that's exactly what Beyond the A is trying to emphasize. That's exactly what our podcast is trying to emphasize. And yeah, it happens in whether you're trying to look like the Wolf of Wall Street or if you're trying to look like the perfect Asian son or, you know, we all have that stuff, the shit just bubbling inside. Yeah.
I think social media, we don't have to be the ones to say how stressful it can be, but also how great it can be, right? And there's a facade that we do put on, and sometimes it's a conscious thing. Like you're going to take a bunch of nice pictures and post it on Facebook. Like there's a very intentional thing. Sometimes I think, you know, we do it subconsciously because we want the validation. And so we only choose to put in genuine parts of ourselves, but selectively genuine parts of ourselves. So Steve, you mentioned like, you know, you present yourself as a happy-go-lucky person. I think you truly are a happy-go-lucky person because I feel your happiness and your enthusiasm exuding out of your body like some aura surrounding you, you know, like there's this glow. And that's real, you know, like your smile, that's real.
Yeah.
But I think what's important is that that's not the only Steve.
That's right. Yeah.
And I think for any of our listeners out there, you know, when we're scrolling through our social media and we see people's happy relationships, people's like wonderful jobs, big houses, we know that, you know, we're happy for them and they probably worked really hard for it, but we don't really see what's behind closed doors.
You don't see the drudgery of everyday life in other people's life, but you experience the drudgery in your own life. If you don't really internalize the fact that everything you see from other people, not just social media or just the way they are, it's not really a facade. It's just a part of them that everybody else sees. And I think that's the one thing that I think our generation is learning as we're getting older is that, hey, there's this other side of me. Or like it's difficult to be on all the time. It's still real. That's still their house. That's still their baby. That's still their wedding. But that's only a small portion of their entire life because their value is beyond a big house or a baby or a wedding.
And also like that snapshot, that happy moment snapshot is just that snapshot. Like it's that one happy moment in their life, but there's 24 hours in a day. Like they don't look like that all the time.
Yeah, everyone only has 24 hours a day, despite what Steve might have you think about his hours.
Yeah, you both said it so well, right? And it's really leading to that point. And I love the work that you're doing with this podcast. You are creating space and you are two honestly super endearing friends of mine. At that time when I was in that moment, everyone's life seemed so perfect. And I thought that it was just, here's the thing. I thought that it was just me. Maybe I was the weird one. Maybe I was the one who has this, I'm supposed to be happy, right? I have this crazy lifestyle. I could jet set anywhere. I don't mean to brag here, right? I could jet set anywhere I want. Maybe it's just me. Why am I feeling this way? And that's what caused that doubt. It started to spiral because at that time, 3-4 years ago, I don't even remember, 3 years ago, 3 years ago, stuff like this wasn't even talked about in the legal profession. Not just any, but especially the legal profession. It blew my mind because last month, Beyond the A, we hosted a talk with the Law Society of BC. That's actually been my goal since I started Beyond the A, is to actually address the Law Society. Wow. And I talked to Law Society of BC, wow. Law Society of Ontario. They would never have this kind of talk.
Wow.
And I invited judges, invited some really top-notch lawyers to share their experience. And one story that someone shared was their wife was pregnant and they actually brought their laptop to the hospital in between contractions. He was doing work and writing the contract. How messed up is that?
Wow.
Even a couple years ago, no one talked about it. And that's what I want to do because I know for a fact, don't get me wrong, it's still a dark times, But I thought it was just me at that time. And I think if I had that avenue, heard that talk, I would be able to catch myself a little earlier.
How are you managing your anxiety right now, Steve?
It's so since that moment, it's been definitely a journey to really understand myself. And I started to really read not just books on business and how to communicate, but books on yourself, books on understanding who I am. And at that time, living room series was still going on, and that was so helpful, right? But a lot of it is journaling, understanding what gives me energy. Talking to you two gives me energy. I'm not tired at all, actually. I could do this like all day. But there's stuff that does drain you, and how do you counterbalance that, right? And just being hyper aware. Also, another thing that I'm doing, I'm very cognizant of it, is just surrounding myself with people, the right people, and just seeing who gives you energy, who drains you. I think it's a conscious thing that I'm doing. And you both are experts at this, so I don't need to be preaching to the choir here, but that's what I'm doing personally.
We're not experts.
One of our mottos is that, hey, we're not experts here. Like, this is literally like one of our slogans. We're not experts, but we're going to talk about it anyway.
We are not experts. But I must say that, you know, even Angie, like, I think I was going through some shit at work too. And you're the one of the first people I called. And that's because I know that you give the space to listen. So when I mean expert, like maybe expert in my mind as friends that I know I can turn to. And there's friends that I've started to distance away from. I don't mean to name names, but I don't really see them anymore. Because I know that we're just talking about drinking and beers and alcohol. I used to be that guy too. Don't get me wrong. I still am part of it. That's still part of me. Okay. There's still that party side of me. Don't get me wrong. Right. I'm not faking any of this. But it's just whether you can have that kind of conversation, right?
I'm glad I was able to be there to hear you out. I didn't even think of it as like anything special because I know that you would do the same for me.
But that's the thing, right? Like when we are being a friend to another friend, we are happily there to be an ear, to be a shoulder, because we love that other person. But we never really think about how impactful it is for the person receiving it on the other end. We're just doing it because we love them, right? Mm-hmm. It's like no big deal. Right? If any one of you call me, I'm like, yeah, let's talk. And if I call any one of you because I feel really shit, it is so much more meaningful on my end. I mean, I'm sure it's great on your end too, but it, you know, just like how Steve, you were mentioning, like when you were back in Vietnam, you were lucky to have a great friend around at that time. It's almost like serendipitous that your friend from Vancouver came all the way to the other side of the world where you felt super isolated on your own, even though you're surrounded by glitz and glamour, but they were there for you and you were able to talk it through. And how impactful was that conversation to hear that your friend was also going through the same thing as you?
Words can't even describe how impactful it is, right? When you're in the thicket of things, it's always so easy to say, oh, just do that. But when you're in the midst of it, you're in a spiral. And we all go through spirals. And it's just part of life too, right? And if anything that COVID has taught all of us, whether I'm grateful for it or not, is that mental health is real. Anxiety and depression is real. And it affects each and every single one of us. And that's also the beauty. I honestly think that this generation, I don't mean to be like, oh, one of those old guys, this generation, right? But at this period of time, there's a lot of self-awareness, which is way more than what it was in the past, when in our parents' past, in our mom or dad, gosh, shit, we don't tell our mom, right? They keep it silent. It's like the shell. There's a stone in front of them that just blocks their heart.
Yeah, that's right. And you know what's funny? When you said like you came back from Vietnam, you felt this like urge to just really find out more about yourself. So you've been reading all these books of like self-help books. And I read a lot of self-help books, but I hate calling them self-help. Because it shouldn't be like you're helping yourself. It should just be part of your life. I guess it is like they should be rebranded to like self-care or even just life. You know,
life books.
Because,
I read life books.
Yeah, I read life books because it makes it sound like you have a problem.
Ah, okay.
But I don't like that because it shouldn't have to be label as a problem for you to be like, you know what, I want to learn how to be a better listener. I want to learn how to connect with myself better or connect with other people better. Or I want to know how to journal. I want to know how to like connect with this side of me. Why does it have to be a problem before we can do it? Like, you go to the bookstore, and I say this because I just went to the bookstore earlier this week, so this is all in my brain. You go to the bookstore, right? You see sections like lifestyle. Okay, you walk over to lifestyle. What do they tell how you had to do? How do you cook? How do you garden? How do you, I don't know, fashion, stuff like that. And yeah, okay, that's lifestyle. But then you go over to the self-help book, and there's this like ominous tone. Like, lifestyle is like all glitzy glamour, like, oh my God, let's cook all these fantastic things, look at all my plants. And then you walk over to the self-help section, it's just like gray. It's like, welcome. Welcome to the nihilistic corner of Chapters Indigo.
Like, oh, your life sucks? Here's the place to be.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you've hit rock bottom? Let us introduce you to our top five recommendations. Like, what is that? Like, we need to normalize self-help stuff more because it's not self-help. It's just, it's life.
Yeah, I like to call it personal growth and personal development. Actually, if you don't read those books, you're actually at a disadvantage. That's how I see it.
That's very lawyer-like.
I'm with Steve on this one.
I agree as well. Especially when I hear about what the younger generations are up to. I feel like, you know, maybe for our parents' generation, we're more ahead of them in terms of, I don't know, technology, et cetera. We're understanding the internet. And I feel the younger kids, they grew up like learning about emotional intelligence, like truly learning about emotional intelligence and how to apply it, not just like, oh, this is what emotional intelligence is. So we're falling behind if we don't do the work ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then we won't be able to connect with our kids.
I'm going to bring it back to this whole social media facade thing. You do all these things, you like create all these organizations, and now in the back end, you're like, oh, I just pass out on the couch. I just pass out on the table. On the chair. I have all these things going on.
I can sleep with my eyes open while writing contracts.
Something else that I see a lot on your social media is you and your wife have this fabulous relationship. Like, you guys go on all these like random mini vacations and go to vineyards, and like, you guys look like the couple, you know? And I've met your wife a few times. She's a lovely person. I'm sure on the back end, there's more than what meets the eye. Tell us more about what your relationship is like with your wife.
This is so funny because the moment he said that, she came home and I could hear her humming in the background right now.
Oh my God.
This is so timely.
Yo, I sensed her.
Yeah, I'm happy to kind of like set the context and set the tone here. To give some context, I met my wife actually at Starbucks. I had picked her up at a Starbucks. She was sitting across from me and I just, you know, got her number, you know, something. It was not as smooth, but it worked out. And I'm one for one for random pickups. Like,
you've reached your peak. You can't go back now.
It does it. And that was like at the early stages of Tinder and whatever it is. So thank God I missed that. Yeah. And it was so interesting because all my past relationships, I was always waiting for the shoe to drop. I'm like, she must be crazy, right? She must be something like, maybe she has like a secret boyfriend or something, but like nothing ever happened. But it wasn't until a couple of years in, you know, one of the things I love about Michelle is that she's such a explicit communicator. Nothing's like off limits, and she's very upfront and like very clear. But we do have ups and downs for sure. And it actually took a really dark moment for us to really learn from that and really figure it out. And there's a point when we had actually we were engaged. I was in Vietnam and we had actually almost canceled our wedding. And this is something that both of us are actually, we actually really like talking about this to friends, because I think it's important to kind of open up the Pandora's box to per se.
How did it come to you guys almost canceling your wedding? Like, what was behind the scenes?
Yeah, and I wanted to pause there earlier, and I'm going to go deeper into it. So set the context. Me going to Vietnam was actually really was my choice. Like, it was really me driving the decision. And at first she was like, hey, you go first for the first couple of months. You go explore a little bit and then I'm going to come join you. But a couple of months in, she had a change of mind. She's like, you know, I don't think I want to come here anymore. And at first I felt betrayed because like, oh, we made this promise. You'll come here with me. And now you're not coming. I felt like, you know, you withdrew your word. And for her, she realized that this was really, really me pushing my agenda along. And it got to the point where our wedding was coming up in a couple months, right? And for some reason, my gut was saying, you know, we got to bring in a third person. We got to bring in like a third party to kind of hear us out a little bit. And I'm really fortunate I did. I do want to give a shout out to Daniel. Daniel is a mentor of mine. And the three of us got in the chat with Daniel to kind of, he used to be a marriage counselor. And we talked about, and we weren't even married, right? So we talked about what we were both looking for. And it's so funny. He made us realize that we were both looking for the same things. Me and Michelle were looking for, our long-term goal was to be back in Vancouver and start a family, right? Whether we get there is a different story. How we get there is a different story. And he just opened up this new thinking between the two of us. They say that it is in your darkest moments and deepest moments is when you learn the most about each other. And I'm so, I don't know if fortunate is the right word of saying, but I'm kind of glad. That's also not the right word, but you know what I mean? That we kind of went through that because now we kind of figure out how we work. So since that moment, we have a system going on. Anytime we get into like any kind of fight, I suppose, we have a system where we try to assess who has the stronger opinion here. And if they have a stronger opinion, they usually get their way. And that's how we decide things. Even planning the wedding was actually really smooth, surprisingly, since that moment. Because wedding planning is a whole new level, right? But it was really like we just listed out those 10, 20 things. Like, okay, who has a stronger opinion? You make the call. Who has a stronger opinion? You make the call. And that's the system we have anytime we get into this kind of like tussle. And that's like, been, yeah.
Like if Michelle cared more about flowers, then Michelle makes the call. Kind of thing. Or like if Steve cares more about what's on the menu, then you're gonna make the call.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly it. And this happened actually a couple months ago. So my wife and I are expecting. We're expecting our baby daughter. Ah!
I didn't know this.
Announcement on podcast.
Holy shit. Yo, congrats, Matt.
Live.
Yeah, congratulations.
Oh my God, you're going to be a father.
You haven't announced it yet?
I haven't. I mean, because right now I'm like, my social media is all about this like campaign thing, right? So Michelle just Michelle's posted it up on her Facebook and stuff. I've done like Instagram just like privately just to like whatever, right? We only did the big announcement yesterday. Drop the bomb.
Oh my God, Christy, are you okay?
I'm good. I'm just thinking, I'm like, I'm gonna tell my mom.
Yeah, you
can. Oh yeah, because you guys have mutual family.
Side note, yeah. His mom and my mom are friends. We don't tell them a lot of shit.
Just to like close the loop on the story, we were just debating about like baby names, right? And the middle name. And like I was like, I don't have a strong opinion on the middle name. So like you go for it. Stuff like that. Like that's how that's how we make decisions.
I love that because a lot of times I find, especially when I talk with friends and they like bitch about their spouses or partners, it's always, there's always a little bit of a tiptoe whenever there comes to be a decision making. Like you may have an opinion, but you're afraid to voice that you have this strong opinion. So you allow your partner to be like, oh, what do you think, when you have already made your own decisions? And then you are upset when your partner doesn't come to the same conclusion as you do.
That's
when you could have just been like, hey, I actually really care about the middle name, and so let's just avoid all of that other bullshit conversation. We don't even need to have all of that other stuff.
That's right. Yeah. And you know what? That's another thing that we can bring back to like the Asian culture, is that the Asian culture is so implicit. Everything's about context, and nobody really wants to put their foot down and be like, I want this, because it's considered like not polite or something like that if you go, hey, we're going to do this. So I feel like for, you know, our generation being the kids of immigrant parents, like a lot of it is like we're trying to learn how to do that with our friends, with our partners, and then eventually with our parents. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a reverse, right?
And it's not like we're you know, being a dictator. I couldn't think of a better word. It's not like, yo, I'm gonna make all these decisions. It's like we're opening up the conversation, you know, when it comes to, hey, baby, middle name, like, how much do you care about it?
Yeah.
We're inviting the other person and then respecting what their thoughts are and then weighing that, you know, weighing how much it matters to the other person. And I think starting a conversation like that is a really good tip. What happens when you both care about something equally?
Usually if we do, we give it a couple of days, and whoever still has the strong opinion, like, they'll carry the day. Mm. So like, yeah, maybe at the beginning we might care about it, but honestly, 90% of the time someone will have a stronger opinion and someone will have a weaker opinion. Mm. And when you know that, hey, it's like, I actually have a strong opinion about this, most of the time it's like, yeah, by all means, go ahead. It's really just about listening. And, you know, every relationship is different, right? Like, you know, I've been really bad. I want to talk about, really build on Angie's point earlier. So much of what we do about relationships and what we think is the right thing to do is from our parents. And they had no idea what they were doing. There's all this past trauma from them that's probably from their parents that it's just carried through and carried down.
Yeah, it goes all the way back to Genghis Khan, you know, like.
Genghis Khan, gosh. Right, because you learn to love by seeing how your parents were loving. It definitely does carry down. And so this system of seeing who has a strong opinion has actually worked really well. And if at first we both might have the same strong opinion, but after a couple of days, like, someone's going to have a strong opinion, someone will have a less strong opinion.
Yeah.
It's absolutely not about winning at this point, right? You're not keeping score.
Yeah. Earlier earlier you mentioned, like, in your, oh, first of all, I'm so happy for you and Michelle. Like, congratulations again. Oh, you're expecting. Ah, that's super exciting news. And we're the first podcast to announce it. Ladies and gentlemen.
You heard it here first.
Hello, our lovely listeners. Not so shameless plug here. We just wanted to let y'all know that we want you to be part of our show. You can now leave us an audio message, send over any questions, comments, or just share some love with us. Link is in the show notes and in our IG bio.
And if you haven't already, follow us on Instagram. We're always asking questions and discussing upcoming topics on IG. So come over and join the conversation at Shit We Don't Tell Mom. We also share our episodes, highlights, takeaways, and quotes. All right, now back to the episode.
You mentioned that in your previous relationships, you were always waiting for the shoe to drop. Like, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, I sometimes don't understand myself too. Like, I'm optimistic, but also a skeptic. It's strange, right?
You're a skeptical optimist. Okay, sure.
Yeah. Like, in the legal profession, skeptics actually do really well. And that's why lawyers are good, because we actually don't really believe what people say. We actually like to dive in and dig in deep. And so that's a good or bad trait. It could be terrible for mental health. But when I talk about shoot or drop, it is just looking at past relationships. I've always been thinking, like, you know, is this really it? Like, I'm waiting. Is there something bad going to happen? It's that weird sense of, like, you know, anticipating bad things to happen. I don't know. I think part of it is probably drawn from, I guess, super, super, like, personal here at this point. Might as well just go right in. I remember in, like, elementary school, like, I was a chubby kid, right? And so for me to, like, when any girl who liked me, like, I was so excited. I just, like, jumped right into it, right? And, like, it just ended up in really bad relationships, especially in high school and university. I would just, you know, I would sometimes date someone. Maybe I didn't really like them as much. And I feel absolutely terrible saying this on air. You know, good or bad, every single one of them actually found, like, the better half, and they each got married. So actually all my four exes, they all, like, married the guy after me. So I don't know what that means. But so maybe that's a good thing.
It's community service.
You set them straight.
I aligned them. I made them realize what they didn't want, right? So part of the shoe dropping is that sometimes, like, a year in, I, like, this is not the right fit. And that's what I mean by the shoe dropping. And so when I first met Michelle, I'm like, here we go again. Like, in a year from now, we're gonna whatever, right? and then she'll meet this other guy and they're gonna get married, right? I was like, oh, the pattern's happening, but has not happened. Won't happen. Hopefully. It won't happen. Just kidding.
I mean, you guys are married and there's a kid coming along, so I think.
And I think from just what you told me, like how you guys went through this pretty big, dark-ish moment in your relationship, like you said, you don't want to say you're glad it happened, but I think like you're thankful for what it brought you guys. Like you're thankful for what it did bring into the relationship, because I think that was probably when you would expect the shoe to drop kind of thing, but you guys got through that with some mediation and with learning about each other. And because of that, that's what makes this relationship different, because you're different. Mm-hmm. So you're not anticipating for the shoe to drop anymore because your mindset is different. That's what I think as a non-expert.
No, and it kind of leads me back to when you're describing the self-help book of grayness. And there's a term that's tossed around a lot, and this is going to be very counterculture, but I'm just going to say it anyways, right? There's a lot of talk about resilience, and there's a school of thought where resilience is like you're just putting up a front, you're just protecting that castle. But resilience is built from actually going through some hard shit. That's actually how resilience is developed. When you go through hard shit, that's when you develop resilience. So as shitty and crappy as it feels, looking back, obviously always easy to look back, but that's when the resilience is built up. So building, like linking to this topic, I'm actually glad Michelle and I had that really tough moment right before we got married. Because, you know, if this happened like down the road, I don't know, right? And I'm not an expert either, right? But I do think there is something important about resilience and going through tough times. I had a buddy who got married to his wife, and then they moved in together like after their wedding, and they never had any real like hard talks. And then, you know, now they're separated, but good or bad, maybe if they had that resilient moment beforehand, you could kind of figure things out. So I'm not preaching, I'm not telling you guys to all go through big fights at all, but I'm just trying to say that resilience is developed from tough situations.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
We're all gonna go and like pick up the phone, find our partners, right? Start digging up some dirt. That's not what we mean here.
Sorry, I take no liability over this.
But I agree. Like this goes for whether you're building resilience in a relationship, like with your partner or with friendships or even with relationship with yourself. Mm-hmm. Because when you are able to pick yourself back up, when you have gone through low moments, dark moments, places of anxiety, places of depression, and then you come out of that, then that also makes you more resilient.
Yeah, I absolutely resonate with that, right? And I'm just thinking ahead, right? You know, how do you teach kids resilience, right? How do you teach our daughter resilience? Like, do you just make them homeless on the street to make them realize like, it's like, like, I don't know, right? Like I grew up really poor. Like I remember food bank donations. I remember like wearing like used clothes. I remember going to the Christmas bureau every year and picking out a toy. I actually didn't realize what was happening until like many years later. Cause there's one day a year, my dad would drive me to this place and he'd be like, pick any toy you want. I'm like, any toy? Is this like Toys R Us but free? And it was such a powerful moment for me when I was young that I could do this. And so I don't know, right? There's a lot of open questions, right? How do you develop resilience? But it has shaped my life and made me really appreciate the power of community, the power of service, and the power of giving back, because it helped me with my life and I want to keep it going. And that's my intent here. That's why I'm doing these different projects, because it's I don't know, this sounds so cheesy, but part of it is I just feel like a moral obligation or even just a calling. Obligation is too hard. Like it's actually a bit of a calling, actually.
Wow. That's so beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. That's, people see us in labels. Like I listed some labels when I introduced you. I'm like, Steve is a lawyer. He's a musician. He's a social entrepreneur. He's a husband. Behind every single label, there is so much more to that person. And I think a lot of times we only pick one of those labels. Like I just listed like four or five things about you, Steve. But a lot of times we present ourselves with just one of these labels, like lawyer. And then we will all have this preconceived notion of what that means, because we all know, we close our eyes and we imagine a lawyer, and then you have all these stereotypes that come with it. And I don't think many folks would think about a struggling kid with two immigrant parents in Canada who visited the Christmas Bureau every year, who moved to the other side of the world and ended up on a balcony one night and questioned their life purpose. We don't think about any of these moments, but it's all of these moments that actually make you who you are.
You would not be the same kind of person had you not gone through all this adversity, because your resilience level would be different. But you know what's kind of interesting is that hearing your background, and I know that like the three of us are friends and we've all had difficult childhoods, and that's kind of what ties us together. And I think it's kind of funny, because when I was abroad, I kind of had the similar feeling as well, but I think not as the contrast was not as dramatic as yours. Like going from the Christmas Bureau to going to Vietnam, working for the top, what is it? You said the biggest global law firm in the world.
Yeah, so it is one of the top law firms in the world.
Yeah, one of the top law firms in the entire world. You have this like really glamorous expat life in this like rapidly developing nation. Like it's amazing. Like you're just there and soaking it all in. And when you're on your balcony, you're just like, who am I? Where is the little Steve who was excited to get a present from the Christmas Bureau? And I think that contrast is what really pulls us back to, you know, East Van, right? It sounds like to me, from like the bird's eye view, is like you went through this huge dramatic shift in your life from being, you know, so poor and just trying to adjust to life in Canada to like killing it in school, and then killing it in work, and then just being like, oh, but have I strayed too far from home? Which was both emotional and physical. And now seeing you back here, just like you said, it's like a calling, right? Because the community has served you in your hardest times. And now that you've, you know, now that you're in a place where you can help other people, to you, it's calling. It feels like this is what you are here for, is to give back to the community. And I think that's absolutely beautiful. Like, I'm pretty sure there are Thai commercials based on your life.
I'm tearing up now. Oh my God.
Oh man. Shit. Now I lost my train of thought.
I know. Sorry.
I mean, Angie, that's so powerfully said. I couldn't have said it better myself. Right. You are absolutely right. It's, you know, I have gone through the struggle, like super poor kid, and you work your way to this, like apparently the most glamorous thing you could do, right? Being top notch law firm, like being a business lawyer, flying around. And you realize that, you know, maybe this is not it. Maybe this is not the calling, right? And coming back here, especially with this recent campaign I'm on, and I know we're not touching on it too deeply, but, you know, having experienced a anti-Asian hate crime incident myself last month, I can't help but think that everything has kind of led me to this point. My involvement in the community with other community groups, my public speaking skills, my learning languages, my ability to understand the law, my ability to like have politician friends, understand the media. I realized that all this thing was coming to this one moment, that this is the moment to step up, Stephen. Your parents didn't come here 30, 40 years ago, suffer through this point for you to keep perpetuating that harm. This is your moment. Like, use your language skills, use your ability to speak, to shape change. And reflecting on what you're saying, I think sometimes, you know, I'm not a religious person at all, but I think there is something that, I don't know, maybe it's a confluence of factors and skills that come to place, but there might be some kind of fate that's guiding what's happening now. It's just too coincidental.
Yeah. And we believe in serendipitous stuff. And that what you had just described sounds to me like a serendipitous event, that everything coming together, all of your life experiences, all the skills that you have built, the people that you have met, now coming to fruition for you to advocate for your people, for the community, so that we can better ourselves as a society. And coming back to full circle, I can see how all of these things bring you energy. And I can see how, like, at the beginning of this conversation, I was like, oh my God, Steve, how do you do it? Like, how do you do it all? And I'm sure you get asked this all the time. And now I get it. You do it because it's your calling, because you are passionate about it, because you want to give back, because all of the things that you have learned in your life, all of your experiences have brought you to every single one of these moments. And right now, it is this campaign, and we will link it all in the show notes. But it was also the Beyond the A. It was also the Living Room series. It was also all of those other community building.
Your Toastmasters, your language, yeah, all your Mandarin lessons. The morning, the times when we would Zoom and practice Mandarin, you know, like, yeah, like, absolutely. It's like all these little things that you did just came into this one moment. That is so well said. Like, I'm blown away.
And I can see, like, all of these things, like, I'm not tired for you anymore.
Yes, me too.
In fact, I'm energized. Okay. I'm pumped. I'm like, oh yeah, you do this, Steve. Like, this is your moment, you know? You fucking trained for this shit, okay?
Yeah, like, I'm inspired. Like, yeah, we're your cheerleaders now.
Thank you. And I take that, like, with my whole heart, and I hear it, I absolutely soak it in. Everyone has a certain thing they do really well, right? And so when you look at it from the outside, you're like, whoa, this is, like, definitely not me. Like, this would drain me, right? And that's probably may have been the initial question, like, this sounds too crazy for me. And I'm still trying to figure it out. I'm still trying to figure this out. But I know what doesn't work, right? What doesn't work, and what that's what brought me to the balcony, is chasing things that are actually not me. That's what doesn't work for me, right? I'm chasing these targets, these social indicators, really pursuing the likes, like having these prestigious titles, but that wasn't me, right? So part of it is just being, for me in these last few years, is having that self-awareness. What gives me energy? Who are the people I like talking to? You two, I love talking to. This is on my calendar, like, since last week, right? I would highlight it in green and yellow if I can, but there are people that I don't particularly enjoy talking to, I'll probably just cancel the invite, right? But I know that doing this session would give me energy. And that's the beauty of it.
That's so awesome. I love that. I think this is a great place for us to wrap up for the evening, as much as I want to keep talking about this with you. But we have so many good nuggets, one of which is the social media facade, right? All of our labels that we have, those are all true to our identity. But they are not the only things in our identity. In fact, it's all the things behind the doors. That's what truly makes us who we are. It's all the things that we experience, all of our low points, because that's what builds resiliency. So I would encourage all of our listeners to reflect and think about, what are some moments in your own life where you have built resiliency for either with yourself or with your friends or with your partner?
And that's exactly the same as, you know, what Steve is going through right now. Just for our listeners, a little bit more background. Steve was unfortunately at the receiving end of a hate crime last month. And, you know, as everyone who knows
Steve well. People threw garbage while he was driving through his window. Mm-hmm. That's what happened. Yeah.
And then, which again, like, I remember saying this, I'm like, I absolutely hate that this happened to you, but I'm also kind of thankful that it happened to you because, like, they messed with the wrong person, you know? Mm-hmm. And, like, you show that many a times. And I think there were moments where I went, is Steve okay? Like, he's going through so much, like, media attention, like, all of this stuff, like, it must be so overwhelming. But then hearing your backstory and how everything just really led to this moment, okay, no, he's not overwhelmed because this is who he is, and this is what he was meant to do. And see, again, it was like the facade of like media attention, but no, it's not that Steve got lucky and was, you know, interviewed by all these news outlets. It's because that he had years and years of work, not to work towards this moment, but it just happened, and his assets and his skills made him the perfect person for this opportunity.
Well said, Angie. And I think that last point that you had just mentioned made me realize one last takeaway for us is that we both kind of projected our own shit thinking about Steve. We're like, oh my gosh, how does he do this? Like, is this even real? How is he not tired? But that all came from like my own experience and how I would feel if something like that happened to me, and how Angie would feel as well. But in reality, you know, that's really not Steve at all. But the lesson learned today in just our recording is that, oh shit, I just projected some of my own bullshit, you know, onto Steve. And then I questioned the authenticity of it, because I was using my own experiences and I was putting it onto another person. And we do that so often, but we often don't catch ourselves doing it.
That's right. That's right. So we are sorry for hurling shit at you. Let's just grab a dustpan and go. Let me just dust that right off of you.
I didn't even notice it. It was just energizing to chat with the both of you. So not even. Don't even. Yeah.
Steve, it was so awesome to have you on the show. How are you feeling right now?
Grateful. I really am. There's a lot of noise out there in the world, right? A lot of noise of anger, hate, bad things. Like, and it's easy to default to spreading that, because it spreads, right? What bleeds leads. But I am feeling grateful for this moment to chat with the both of you. Grateful for the ability to use my, I guess, public speaking skills to really push, you know, making the world a better and kinder place. And just grateful for these dark moments, because they have taught me many lessons. And I absolutely agree. I wouldn't be who I am now without those moments. And that's the honest truth. So grateful. Yeah.
That's awesome. Thank you, Steve. Thanks for joining us today and sharing all your stories and, you know, being vulnerable with us. And I know there were moments when you were about to cry, and I just love it when that happens.
Yes, I am Angie's an advocate. I'm an advocate for people who cry.
For like, if we can get people to cry on our show, then we have succeeded.
Hashtag blessed.
Thank you for listening to the Shit We Don't Tell Mom podcast with Christy
and with Angie. Get that uncomfortable shit out in the open with your partner, a dear friend, a trusted family member, and with us.
And as much as we love talking, we also love to listen. Hit us up with any feedback or topics you'd like us to chat about on Instagram at @shitwedonttellmom or email us at shitwedonttellmom@gmail.com.
Be sure to subscribe and share with your friends.
Bye! We know all the skeletons in our closets.
Yeah. It's nice to see yours too.
It's not skeletons. It's just who we are, right?
Yeah.
And so it's just, yeah. It's just a closet, not a skeleton. Yeah. It's just stuff.
You're right. Yeah. It's all the stuff.
You can stuff, either right? Shove everything in the closet and forget about it, or you can reorganize it.
Yeah. Dude, that's a wisdom bomb right there. Boom. Huh? Oh, what? That's a wisdom bomb. That's such a great line.
This is why we keep the recording on.
Yeah. Even such a good line.
A wisdom bomb. Steve, yeah, you love all my like lines, but honestly, I just try to make them as cheesy as possible. And you're the only person who's like, oh, that was so good.
I think it's good because I'm going to copy it, right? Like, I'm going to use the same thing down the road. Like, you could shove all the shit in the closet. Why don't you just reorganize it? Dang, just use that.
Some Marie Kondo shit there, you know?
It is Marie Kondo shit.